Project Sapien is a podcast meant to engage our brothers and sisters in the law enforcement and military communities in conversations we all know we need to have. All opinions you hear are our own and are protected by the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. They in no way reflect or are meant to reflect the opinion of any specific agency, officer, or service member. Some opinions may be controversial. Listener discretion is advised. Sapien, back at it.
Dude, I'm digging that intro song today. That's pretty solid, Iman.
I figured we'll go to sort of like a gunfighter theme type intro.
I'm like ready to strap and go. That's freaking fantastic. Number one law enforcement military podcast with the best soundtrack on the planet is back, thanks to the tens of thousands of listeners. We heard you. We're back for season three, and we are full send this season. It would not be possible without all of our partners and supporters, starting with our good friends over at AAA Police Supply. Our law enforcement listeners listening right now, if you need a one-stop shop for supplies and duty gear, you need to look no further. Head to AAApoliceSupply.com and use the code HYBRID10 for 10% off every order you make. And that's not just a one-time code. That's every single time you make an order, use that code HYBRID10. I want to thank our friends over at the Havoc Journal as well, the voice of the veteran community focusing on current affairs and articles of interest to the public in general, but really the veteran community specifically. For independent news that gets the facts on everything from geopolitics, science and tech, finance to contemporary affairs and entertainment, head over to HavocJournal.com and also make sure and check out our partners there as well at the Profiles in Havoc podcast. Big thanks to Second Mission Foundation. They're educating, elevating, and advocating for all of our service community, helping them find their second mission after government service. To learn more, head over to secondmissionfoundation.org. Huge thanks to our friends at 22 Mohawks, combating veteran suicide by providing assistance to veterans needing help navigating the re-entry into the civilian world, or even back to planet Earth after they throw Iman out of a plane in a couple weeks when they return home from duty. Learn more about why they're throwing Iman out of a plane at 22mohawks.com. Also want to thank our good friend Kyle Lamb and his company Viking Tactics, the best tactical gear anywhere, from battle belts to slings and everything in between. Kyle's company offers an elite selection of high-quality, battle-proven tactical gear guaranteed to be ready for you when you need it every single time the job calls for it. Check him out at vikingtactics.com. And of course, we want to thank our friends over at the Overwatch Project. We all know how suicide can be an impulsive decision, sometimes taking less than 10 minutes to get to that thought after research has shown, and firearms are the most lethal tool. The Overwatch Project's aim is to put some time and distance between our person in crisis and that tool by just fucking asking the question, do you have a plan for your firearms when you're in that dark place? Can we make one together? And will you be my buddy and help me do the same? Head over to overwatchproject.org for more information on how to form workable plans of action and how to just fucking ask. Iman, man, we've had some bangers so far this year, this season, and this one, we just keep hitting hit after hit after hit after hit, and the feedback's been so positive and so exciting. I just got to thank you again for giving me an opportunity to sit in this chair, man.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. That's it's been a great conversations we've been having this season about resiliency and how to build it and how to acquire it, or last week's episode with Charlie Faint. What an amazing dude, such a powerful ally in the veteran community with just doing what he does.
Absolutely unbelievable. And I mean, everybody keeps elevating the bar every single week. And, you know, as we've kind of set people up on the schedule here this week, it's going to get pushed even a little bit higher. Joining us today is Captain Ted King. Mr. King grew up down in Bakersfield and graduated from North High School before attending Bakersfield College and then joined the U.S. Army. So he's an Army brat like you, sir, where he served with the 1st Armored Division and later in the European Command. And after 2 deployments to the Middle East, he went back to Bakersfield and hired by the Bakersfield PD in 05, working his way through multiple assignments, patrol, special enforcement unit, SWAT. He promoted up to detective, robbery, homicide, and then sergeant, and all the way up through now till Captain King was promoted to his current rank in 2022 and selected to command the Field Services Division. So joining us today, the man, the myth, and quite possibly the best looking man ever in podcasting, Ted King.
Good morning, guys. Well, good morning to Jake. Happy afternoon, Ayman. How are you guys?
I am doing great. Just worked a overnight shift. It's a wonderful day in the city when it is so quiet. I don't have to do a thing.
Gotta love those nights.
Absolutely. Well, Ted, thanks for joining us. And it's a real pleasure to have you. We've been talking over the past, couple of years, and even we went out to Bakersfield to train a few of your officers on SIT, stress inoculation training and tactics, which I know your officers absolutely loved. It's been quite the journey with all other police departments that we brought this sort of training to, and it's really all about the leadership, how the leadership sees the benefits of training their officers and not just training them as a check the box type training, but actually honing in their skills and really showing the officers that the leadership is actually there for them to help them guide them through their career. And this is, that's the biggest thing with what I'm seeing, especially sitting where I'm sitting now as a sergeant, is just, the more guiding and mentoring the young officers, it really does change the dynamic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. What we've kind of found is that, I think across the board, primarily we all kind of recognize the same values, but, different leaders emphasize different ones, to a greater degree or a lesser degree. And, I know that for us, and directly in line with what you're saying, the wellness and, preventative leadership, if you will, that sort of thing has really kind of taken a front seat, and it's really heavily emphasized at this point, especially in our agency.
So, Ted, if you can walk us through a little bit, because I mean, not for not, 2005 was almost 20 years ago, and there has been a lot of change in West Coast in general, California specifically, Bakersfield micro specifically. You guys, you've gone through a lot of stuff since you came back. Can you walk us through a brief timeline of sort of what you've seen as a change on that front within Bakersfield from 05 to today, which is almost 20 years later?
Yeah. Where to begin? It's, and I think it's not just with us, but, we've certainly had some, specific instances of having, our state DOJ, a federal DOJ investigation. Both of those have happened within the time I've been with our agency. We're currently in a stipulated agreement to modify some of our training, some of our policies, things like that with our state DOJ. So in probably the last 3 to 4 years, it's really, really become dynamic with how we're trying to move things forward and progress our agency. Not that I'm a little bit biased. I don't think that we were doing it horribly before, but like anything, it's been around for a while, like an old house. Sometimes it's time to throw, not just a new coat of paint, but maybe you got to knock down a wall and change the floors. You know what I mean? So, I really think that this thing has, been good for us, and that the personnel that we have in place right now have accepted this change and accepted this, the need for progress and moving things forward in not just a way that, capitulates to, kind of the headlines or anything like that, but in a meaningful way that takes into account the citizens that we're trying to serve, as well as the team that we're fielding every day.
Well, that seemed to have, go ahead, Ayman.
No, go ahead, Jake.
Yeah, I was going to say, to expand on that a little bit, we've been down there, obviously, full transparency, been doing some work with you guys for a while and have a pretty good relationship with a number of officers down there and you guys on the command side. And what I see out of your department is an incredible representation of, as the officers on patrol are an incredible representation of your community at large. They come in from all sorts of different backgrounds and are, for lack of a better term, true community police officers. I mean, they are fully engaged in the community. They understand the needs of the community. They've listened to what the needs of the community are. And they're also providing, not to necessarily say that they're just saying yes to everything that the community wants, but more in the sense of, as peace officers, legitimately, proactively keeping the peace in ways that, from what we've seen across the country, yes, there are other departments that do very similar types of training and engagement, but I mean, it's really hard for us to say that anybody does it better than you guys. And I think that's a huge testament to the types of officers that you guys have been bringing in the last 15, 20 years.
I really appreciate that. I'm very proud of our agency. We do have exceptional people. I think that being California where we are, we're Central California, but kind of at the southern end of that. So we're a couple hours north of LA and a couple hours south of Fresno. So we end up getting kind of, in my own opinion, not my agency's, but my own, is that we kind of get stuck on a little bit of an island when it comes to training. You know, we can travel a few hours north or a few hours south and participate in some larger scale training and whatnot. But, you know, a lot of times that's financially restrictive, time-wise restrictive, things like that. So we end up developing a lot of our own training, bringing in subject matter experts such as yourselves, and trying to, you know, really put the officers first, as far as how well we're preparing them, what we're preparing them for, and the regional relevancy of that training and how it affects our community. So we don't need to know how Los Angeles polices and mimic that, or how Fresno, or, you know, somebody up in the Bay Area, how they police and mimic that. We need to be aware of trends, but we also need to understand that each community is a little bit different, and each community supports and expects a little bit different things from their police departments and sheriff's departments. And I think that we can always do a better job, but I think that we do a pretty good job here, to be honest.
Yeah. So it's interesting that the way you put it, in terms of different communities have different needs, which is, you know, 100% true, because, you know, just, I work, you know, in a city, and we have several towns that are around us, and, you know, our city problems are not the same as the town problems, and the town problems are not the same as the city problems. So it's funny and interesting to see that sort of dynamic, where our training is a little different, you know, more robust, more, you know, for city, and a lot more, we have a lot more going on versus, you know, some of the small communities we have that surround us that are, you know, tiny departments or whatever, what have you, and their needs and wants are a lot different than ours. And you can tell just by the pace that we move, where I think our average is our 911 goes off every 5 seconds. You know, that's sort of the average, where our dispatch center is just hopping all the time, versus, you know, the surrounding communities, they decided to go to regional dispatch center, where we wouldn't be able to do that, you know, because just our call volume is so different compared to theirs. And and, you know, bringing it around, where recognizing that as in the leadership, right, recognizing the wants and needs of officer first, like you said officer first, which is really not awesome to hear, because you know, we've traveled around the country and in the, you know, where I train in the New England area, that officer first mentality, it may be said, but it's not really practiced. Right. That's the thing, you know, with Charlie, when we were talking to Charlie about leadership and military, you know, with the leadership in the military, and you know, as well as I do, you know, there became a time, especially during the global war on terror, it became soldier first, right? We need to make sure our soldiers are battle ready, and they're ready to fight, and they're ready to do this, they're ready to do that. And then we need to make sure that their wellness and they're able to keep up with the needs and wants of the mission. And it seems that in law enforcement, it's not yet there, but it's getting there.
Yeah. I think that's definitely fair. I think that, something that I learned in the military, and I would imagine is probably consistent with your experience, is that it is mission first, soldiers always, right? So it's something that a lot of times, especially in civilian law enforcement, that can create some prioritization problems, you know, pretty easily when it comes to, you know, the long hours and the training and the expectations of what we're putting on our men and women that are out there wearing our badges, right? So, what I have seen is that can create a lot of turmoil inside as well, because yes, absolutely, wellness, officer safety, those types of things are priorities for us. They are hugely important. They are still slightly behind the mission when it comes to what our priorities are, though, you know. And so when I say it's officer first, it is definitely officer first when it comes to training and how we're emphasizing wellness and things like that. But a lot of times it is, we find ourselves at odds sometimes with some of our own people, when, you know, they want a particular thing, or they, you know, hey, I thought it was officer first, but you're telling me I need to cancel my vacation and come back to work because, you know, of whatever the community need is. So there's always that balance and that little bit of, I don't even want to say it's a dichotomy, but it's almost a little bit of, flip sides of the same coin, right? So we definitely want to take care of our officers, definitely want to get them the training that they need, make sure that they have the education that they need so that they can connect to the community and ultimately serve the community the best that they can.
Yeah, when I say soldier first, it's similar with the officer first about the training and getting them, the best training and the best education possible. But, in the end, it's always the mission first, right? That's the thing. Right. No matter what, the mission comes first. And it's sort of, what I've learned in my time, I'm sure it's the same for you in the military. It's always been mission team self, right? Because right. The team, you got to put the team before yourself. And that's something that is really shown also on SWAT, right? Because it's mission team self, because that's the only way that would work, especially in that environment. That's the way it needs to be. But the self, like you said, Ted, the self, though, in law enforcement, it's still a little behind, right? It's still, the training can be, a little more centered around the officer self-awareness or the officer's resilience, right? Yeah, that's
absolutely
where you build that resilience within the officer, where the officer now is out there doing the work and has that resiliency built into any training that they go to, and that just makes them that much more effective.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that you've hit on a very important point that at least what I've the point that I took out of that is a lot of times our officers, we focus so much on the mission and the prevention that we forget about what it's like to actually experience a particular emotion or be able to accept different things that are happening to us and reach out for the help that is relevant, and that's huge. I know that I'll speak for myself. There's been plenty of times both as a, person on the street or person related, operating in a tactical environment, or even as a leader that was not in harm's way, but just out there and sending people that were in harm's way. That's, it's tough. It's stuff that, there's stuff that I think all of us, that have been in that realm or that arena have, we still carry it, it is healthy to reach out and to find those means to kind of alleviate some of that baggage that we carry. But at the same time, I feel like it'd be pretty short-sighted to say that we can totally get rid of it, and again, speaking for myself, not my agency on that, and my own experience. So
with that in mind, now that you're in the command side of things, how do you balance, where do you find the balancing line of, maybe oversharing, right? I mean, commander's intent with regards to mission, and is it something along the lines where you've got people almost need a certain level of experience to be able to understand what you want to tell them versus, are you tailoring that message for specific levels or experience levels of officers versus others? Or is it just kind of, the other option or the other way that we've seen is, hey, learn by fire hose. If you don't get it, you don't get it. Just keep up. Right. I mean, there's kind of two different ways to do it. And how do you guys manage that with such, cause you have 550 plus officers. I mean, that's a lot of bodies.
Yeah, we're a little over 500, not quite to 550, but it's tough, and what I've seen is, we've grown quite a bit since I've been here. We've been, especially during the recession when we were cutting spots, we were down in the mid 300s, which was light for us. I think that now dealing with more people out on patrol and more people that have to be part of the training, what we've seen is, similar like you would with any organization, is that bell curve, right? 10% of the people are going to pick it up and be superstars, and 10% are probably not ever going to get it. We spend a lot of time with that 10%. But then that 80% that's in the middle is, they're malleable, right? They're folks that we can get to, and we just have to find the right way to connect that training and that intention with what works for them, with the language that they speak and that internal voice that they've got. So, I wouldn't say that we found a perfect way, because I think that everybody that's part of that, all 530 of us, right. We all have different needs. We all have a slightly different accent on that internal voice. So, what I feel is probably most effective is just one, modeling good behavior, being a model and an example for our officers. So starting at the, it starts everywhere, right? It starts from the time that you begin as a police officer or whatever your profession is. But we really have to emphasize that with those frontline supervisors, to include our senior officers or corporals, as we're called in some other agencies, but our sergeants specifically, they've got the most influence with our troops. They got more influence than I do, or I could ever hope to have, you know, and I think we've all seen it where if you have a good supervisor that really cares for you and treats you fairly and not just is the super cool guy that wants to be friends, but is somebody that demands that you meet a standard and is constantly pouring back into you with expectation, but also guidance and support, then you want to bend over backwards for that person. You know, you'll do anything. And we're really trying to get that through to our frontline supervisors. And I think that the better product we get is through the people who are successful at that. And then, like I said, they're able to translate that, whether it's the chief's vision or it's the commander's intent or tactical commander's objectives that they're setting out there, they're able to translate that and explain it to the officers that, hey, this is the skill or the task that I need you to accomplish. This is why, and this is how I prepared you to do that.
So it's funny you say that the way you put it, where, you know, yeah, the 10% are the ones that we concentrate the most on sometimes because, you know, we you know, it's not like we, you know, in the profession, it's, you know, if you take it down to the human level or whatever, it's not like we want to see anyone fail right at this profession. Everyone,
oh, absolutely.
You know, we want everyone to do their very best. And there are times where, you know, the way I might do something might not be the way somebody else might do something. And that's something we spoke to, you know, with Charlie about is, you know, back in the early 90s with the Army, everything needed to be perfect, right? Everything needed to be dressed right, dressed perfect, perfect, perfect. Otherwise, you failed, right? And then,
right.
We get attacked and then the wars are ramping up and we're deploying and doing all these things where the Army sort of shifted its focus to say, okay, instead of perfect, that's just good enough, right? That's good enough.
Yeah.
That's good work, you know, give credit where credit's due, where, yeah, you know, the way I may handle the situation is going to be different than the way the next patrol guy handles the situation or even another sergeant handles that situation. So, but
right.
If we all get to the same objective, you know, whatever the commander's intent is, if we are successful at it, well, then who cares how it gets there, right? It got done. The mission got done. The job got done, mind you, without anyone, you know, depending on what it is, you know, without anyone getting hurt or anything like that. But it's very interesting that just, you know, the different officers, like, you know, like I have certain officers on my squad where, yeah, I can send them wherever, you know, and they'll get the job done perfect, you know, like, well, not perfect, but, you know, they do it their way and right. Let them do it their way and they'll find a way to do it. Right. You know, like Marcus Aurelius, he says, you know, when an obstacle is in the way, it becomes the way. That's the way these guys are. There's no obstacle that they can't figure out.
Yeah. Right.
Figure their way around. And that's the thing with certain other officers, I may give them a task that they will be good at. Right. I won't
right.
put them in a tactical situation because I know they're not there yet. I'll give them something else to do, you know? And that's the thing is being able to kind of shape these officers and like you said, the sergeants are really the ones that shape officers, right? They're really,
absolutely.
You know, they're really the ones that put officers ahead of themselves, you know, because they really want these officers. Like for me personally, I want my officers to learn, you know, to really
absolutely.
Learn what the job is, because if I give them all the answers, they're not going to learn.
Right.
And
right. Yeah. We actually work against developing critical thinking skills by giving them the answers. Right. So that's something that we constantly deal with training and developing those kind of training scars, right. Where we can give them the answer or, one of my favorites was in a tactical environment, right? We can hit a house or we can hit a run on a training structure or whatever. And, you know, you screw up little things, right? You might take a doorway wrong or you might, you know, lag somebody or you might have some missed coverage or something like that, right? Going through the house. And so what I found that we would do, and probably what most tactical teams would do is that you then go back and rehearse it and you go through and do it a couple more times, get all the friction points out as best you can. But really your success is how well you hit that first run, right? It's not how well you've choreographed the 10th run. It's that first run. So, and having the supervisors that, like you said, they recognize where it is that we need to improve. I kind of want to go back to what you were saying, because I feel like I don't know if you finished your thought on it, but if so, I wanted to push back just a little bit as far as you're absolutely right. Initially, even in my career here with my agency, very top down to begin with. Right. And then we flattened out a little bit and it became more of a, just find a way to get there and we'll accept the individuality that comes with, you know, the diverse workforce that we have, which can be huge, right? That can be one of our greatest strengths. What we're finding now is that while that is still important, the way that we do it has to be, there has to be a standard, right? There has to be a minimum standard, or else we find people that start to shortcut, you know, and we're such a, again, I'll speak for my own opinion on this, but we're such a, priority-based, get things done quickly, organization and probably career field in general, that we can really develop some bad habits and some shortcuts if we're not very intentional with the processes that we implement and the training that we implement and things like that. One of my favorite quotes is from a book called Ender's Game. I don't know if you guys want to watch that or not. I do too. And it's the way we win matters, right? The way we win matters. And so really trying to explain that to our folks now and emphasize that with our frontline supervisors, because they have so much influence, they have to understand that the way that we're doing things matters, you know, and I take that back a little bit further. There is no way that we're going to get perfection. You know, the only way that we get perfection is either by accident or by choreography. And those are both unrealistic when it comes to a real problem that you're faced with. However, we can get very, very good, you know, and we can get very, very good by pouring into our people, emphasizing training, and emphasizing the values that our individual organizations need to put forward for their communities.
I feel like you actually just teed me up, which is supposed to be the other way around, where I tee you up. That was literally my next question for you was, you know, we have this unique scenario with you in particular. You know, we just got done talking with Charlie last week, and, you know, military rules of engagement and the customers in which the military is going to deal with in a kinetic environment are, it's very one way, you know, it's like hostile intent, hostile act, send it, right? Doesn't really work that way on the domestic front. And with the civilian side and the policing side, you having been in both worlds, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, police officers are out there providing customer service to the community, right? And in a way that try to translate some of this stuff to you know, language or verbiage that the civilians that are listening or people that maybe aren't as familiar with law enforcement and military can wrap their head around, right? And a lot of people understand customer service. And so I use that term in the sense of, you know, you've got your commander's intent and the troops, the soul, you know, your soldiers in the PD side, you know, obviously going to be the officers. They're all in line. We've got everybody dialed in, right? But you still have that one level of communication that you got to get across with, okay, commander's intent is coming from what? Policy directed by who? Well, a lot of times city council and the members of the community who don't necessarily speak the same language. So how do you find the best, you know, the best way, and I know it's a personnel thing too, but you know, there's that fine line of transparency and dissemination of information to the civilian side, i.e. the customers, with your officers. What's been the most successful way you guys have found? Because you've gone through, you've and not to put anybody on the spot or on blast by any means, but you guys have taken some lumps and some bruises on that front and in the past historically.
Absolutely.
And now, you know, now you guys are one of the foremost agencies, just from what we've seen with regards to the community engagement and the symbiotic nature there. How have you guys done that, bridging that gap between what's going on in the blue family and then the external civilian family?
Yeah. It's really, I think, kind of a matter of perspective and trying to share perspective throughout the different levels of an organization, right? So something that I like to explain to our folks is that, let me back up. So frontline officer, very easy to say, the brass has lost contact. You know, they're out of contact. They're out of touch with what's going on. You know, they're not pushing cars around. They're at home sleeping while I'm out here working and that sort of thing. Right. And it's very easy to kind of pull that, the team apart in the middle, if we're not very intentional about how we're doing things, why we're doing things and the role and responsibility that everybody has. So I kind of, I think visually the way I see it is like, we've got this super highway that we're all going down and the frontline officer has their lane. Supervisor has their lane, and it works all the way up to the chain, right? So, the closer you get to the officer side is really the application of police work, whereas the opposite side, the chief side, is really the philosophy of police work, right? And then there's a mix of that that goes all the way down through each of those lanes that would be at each of the different ranks. So, as you move up, you go more toward the philosophy and less toward the action, right? But you're not completely out of it. And I'm not saying that the chief couldn't go out and push a black and white if he needed to. But what I'm saying is that it's important that we understand that everybody has a role and a responsibility to play in an effective organization. So it doesn't do anybody any good if I'm the best tactician at my agency, right? Like, doesn't matter. I sit at a desk and I participate in Zoom meetings all day. You know, like my cool guy time is done. I still have to have credibility, you know what I mean? So I still have to be able to go out there and perform to a certain degree, but to think that I'm as good as the men and women that are doing it right now, that are out there, you know, working overnight while I'm home sleeping, like they're better than I was, right? They should be better now than I was 20 years ago. The people who take my spot, you know, when I retire, right. Or even if I move out of my current position and the next person takes my spot, I'm hoping to leave it in a position that person can take the reins and run and progress us forward and be better than I was. Right. Just like I'm hoping that I'm better than the person that came before me. So I think that really just adding that perspective and developing the training and developing the conversations and just how we interact and communicate throughout the organization is really important in that regard. And I think that it kind of goes toward what you're saying. Something that you brought up was the difference between the military and police work. A lot of times we intentionally blur those lines because there is so much similarity, but something that is hugely different is that in the military, you've got an enemy, right? You've got a defined enemy. In police work, you don't have a defined enemy. Even that person that we go to arrest is not our enemy necessarily. They've just done something that's broken the law. So it doesn't necessarily mean they're a bad person. I mean, they certainly can be. We've all encountered truly evil people if you've been in this job for any amount of time. But even then, it is something where they've broken our society rules. You know what I mean? They're not trying to necessarily overtake our way of life or anything like that. So it's difficult to, it's really difficult to unite everybody the best way to say it. It is easier to unite people against an enemy than it is against, you know, the various individual rule breakers. Right. And when I say unite them, we don't have problems having our officers, you know, go to work and get into situations and handle calls for service, but how they would truly handle that, you know, like if you're repelling an attack or you're fighting through an ambush or you're doing any of the tactical things against a defined enemy, I'm not, certainly not going to say it's easy, but it's straightforward what you got to do, right? Connecting with, and we saw the military have some problems with this as well, even during my time, connecting with civilian populations and trying to influence hearts and minds, that's a lot more difficult because there's a lot more, it's just a lot more dynamic. There's a lot more humanity that's involved in, you know, individual needs, trying to meet those. And like I said, I could go down a rabbit hole on that stuff, but when it comes to how we pour into the officers to do that type of thing, it's important that they understand their role, their responsibility, the vision of the commander's intent, and what the community expectations are of all of us.
Yeah, that's the thing. I always go with, you know, the whether it's training or even a mission set, you know, here's it, task condition standards, right? Here's your task, here's the conditions, and here's the standard. This is the standard that, you know, we all need to uphold, you know, whatever it might be. And you know, when the officer makes a decision, that would be a way they do it, to me is, you know, you've kept the standard, you've made the decision, and you've executed, you know, did a good job. You know, and that's it. You know, it may not be, like I said earlier, it may not be the way I would have done it, but you kept up on the standard. You understood the task, you got the conditions, and you've met the standard, you know, and that's the thing where you say, yeah, we all need to have standards. Absolutely. Right. There needs to be standards that we all need to abide by. Right. That way we can effectively do the job and us as leaders guiding the young officers to those standards, having them realize, again, from commander's intent all the way down to the line supervisors, to be able to relay that information all the way down the line. That way your frontline officers understand the mission, understand the task or the standard that they need to all abide by. And that's what, you know, policies, procedures, that's all they are, right? Policy, procedures, just these are the standards, and that's pretty much it. You know, that's the way I see them. And you know, and there's policies almost everything, right? Well, from your uniform all the way down to whatever. And it's all written down. And you know, when we train to that standard, right, it really makes a very effective officer, right? In the military, when they say, oh yeah, we train to a standard to make an effective soldier, or the same thing in law enforcement, we train to a certain standard to make an effective officer out there. And in Bakersfield, I know, you know, when we went out there, I mean, the different programs you have are just awesome. I mean, I haven't seen anything really like it in a long time. Jake, I think you said the same thing in terms of some of the programs, you know, that Bakersfield has for their officers. I don't see too many PDs kind of have that.
Yeah, and Ted, if you don't mind, I mean, we know this answer, but for the listeners here that are wanting to know why they need to suddenly put in for a lateral transfer to Bakersfield, can you kind of walk us through some of, you know, the what I would consider radically progressive offerings that you have for your team?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we do have hiring bonuses for laterals right now. So, and it's my division that is now in charge of that. So please hit us up, join bpd.us. Seriously though, we have some amazing people that have really kind of found ways to kind of pathfind in new areas, or at least areas that were new to us. So one of our folks, he's a Sergeant Baron Coleman, just an awesome, awesome person. And he took what was initially developed as a peer support group, and he's really kind of taken that. It is now his full-time assignment. That may back up that peer support group that we started few years back was a collateral assignment. And so we would send, you know, a group of folks to some additional training. And then when we had a critical incident or something that rose to the level of, you know, maybe we wanted to provide some wellness options or services to involved officers, we would offer it, but it was through this collateral group. Now it is absolutely a, full-time gig. We just opened our wellness center, which is a place that our officers can go. It's in our jurisdiction. It's in the downtown area. Officers can go there. They can, it's a secure facility. They can take their gun belt off if they need to. They can type out their reports during the day. They can access it 24/7 for that sort of thing. During the day, Sergeant Coleman is there, and he and one of our retired detectives, Andrea Flew, both work there fairly around the clock, it seems, to bring new things in. So they're bringing just different community services. They're bringing mental health services. They're bringing all of these things into this group that is, whereas it used to just kind of be you could get it if you really sought it out. Now it's, hey, this stuff is right here. It's at your fingertips. It is absolutely one of the priorities of our agency to take care of our people and to take care of those issues, the seeds of those issues before they become tumbleweeds and thorns down the road.
Wow. Yeah, that's, I mean, so the wellness center, was it around when we were out there helping with training, or was it something newer?
I don't think it was set up yet. I think we opened it. We've been working on it for a while, okay. But we opened it, I want to say it was just before Thanksgiving of last year.
Okay.
So it's, like I said, it's a real cool little spot. And even if even for our officers who have not participated in, you know, say like a mental health offering or something like that, there's still times where the staff out there under Sergeant Coleman will get together and they'll say, hey, we've got tri-tip lunch for everybody today. Come on by. Oh, you know, and so cool. Officers can just swing through and, you know, take a couple minutes to, you know, turn the radio down a little bit. And don't get me wrong, we still make sure we got other people out there, but they can turn down their radio for a little bit and take, you know, 15 minutes to grab some food and kind of power up and catch their breath and then head back out there with a little bit more juice in the tank.
Yeah, that sounds like you're taking some good lessons from the fire department there, providing tri-tip for lunch every day, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we do have a very good relationship with our fire department here, so we learn a lot from our brothers in red.
No, that's awesome. Now, with that said, I understand you guys have also a certain system through Blue Team where you're able to track not – you know, punishment purposes, but to track your officer's wellness, so to speak. If they get into one too many incidents, you know, that throws up, I shouldn't call it a red flag, but it throws up a little signal like, hey, you might want to check on this officer type right. of thing. If you can walk through that just a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So our agency uses Blue Team as the software that interacts with IA Pro and EI Pro. So essentially what we can do through that is track, we track all sorts of things as far as our early intervention system, but along with all of the use of force avenues and mediums that we have, we track wellness and pursuits and crashes and things like that as well. So the wellness one though is really pretty interesting because there's a lot of subjectivity there, and it's something that as the on scene supervisor creates or initiates that Blue Team entry, he or she can then take the facts of that the circumstance that was or the experience that the officers had, and they can add a wellness entry. So with any of the early intervention categories, there's thresholds that we set that we say, hey, you know, with this amount of frequency under this amount of time, we want to make sure that we're doing something, you know, and make sure that we're reaching out to our officers, making sure that they're aware of the services that are out there. If it gets to be, you know, that frequency gets to be too high in a short amount of time, we might pull them off the street and send them to the doctor, you know, to go talk. It might not be something that is optional for them. So, and it's not like you said, it is not absolutely not something that is discipline. It's not something where we want to keep them off of the street or anything like that, but we want to make sure that, hey, we'll take you and we'll pay overtime to send you and make sure that you're good. You know what I mean? Because I know that a lot of us, myself included, will say, no, I'm fine. That'll be the first answer that we give.
Yeah.
And then we think about it a little bit more and something's actually bugging us. So, you know, it is. And that's not from a position of weakness or anything else. I think that's from a position of honor, and it's from a position of duty, you know, a sense of duty. But really, it's, you know, for the long game, we need officers to stay healthy as long as they can be healthy, both physically, mentally, and spiritually, you know, and that we get them out there and we get the best service we can to our community, because that's what ultimately the mission is.
Well, and the hard part about that is that no one instance, or, you know, it's not like a linear curve, right? It's that constant normalizing that conversation to where they have the comfort to understand I can express and it's not going to result in you taking my gun and my badge, because, right. You know, it could be something totally innocuous, and it's like any one snowflake is not a danger, but every cumulative snowflake that becomes a snowball can eventually become an avalanche. And then it's that last snowflake, and that one, you know, individual totally innocuous snowflake triggers the whole slide. And you just don't know where or when that's going to be. And if you're trying to spot check, you know, oh, it's going to be this thing. Well, I could wear 10 of those and be fine, but the 11th one not. And somebody else, it could be, one exposure to that and not be fine, you know? So same as concussions, right? And no two concussions are the same. No two head traumas are the same, even on the same person. And I think by normalizing that conversation and making it a standard, just no different than, you know, hey, how was your morning? What kind of coffee do you want? How are we doing headspace? Why, you know, making it something that's not going to be punitive in particular, but really there for the benefit of the officer and the department as a whole, without that kind of old guard, you know, pull up your bootstraps bullshit where it's just suck it up and deal with it. It's like, well, yeah, what happened was suck it up and deal with it is people started suck starting their 9mm on duty. I mean, it's like there's no question the correlation of on duty suicides from officers with their sidearms and that type of mentality. If you are going to bury your head in the sand and just tell people to wear it, they're going to wear it, and they're going to wear it to a point where they make a horrible decision. And that's not what any of us want. And so I think that you guys normalizing that conversation, really getting out in front of that so that, you know, maybe there's some old guard, old dogs long in the tooth that can't quite wrap their head around it. But, you know, we've all got dads that don't understand the internet. That shit's normal. But right. the newer generation of cops coming up and the new kids on the block, they're much better at expressing, right? And not feeling hopefully threatened in their career path by doing so. I cannot say enough about how much better that makes me feel, knowing that, you know, one of our best agencies in the country is down there doing that on the daily with you guys down in Bakersfield. It's just, it's incredible.
I appreciate that. I certainly don't want it to sound like we've got it all figured out, because it's a constant work in progress, and we're always looking for ways to improve. There's always ways that we can improve. But it's one of the things that I think has really helped us is a few years back, we had a very influential officer, SWAT guy, homicide detective, you know, all the traditional cool guy stuff. Right. And just a super, super solid person, kind of raise his hand and say, I need some help, you know? And so that really opened some eyes when it was one of the heavy lifters that, did it, and he did it all by himself. And it was just something where that, again, that modeling and that example that, that he put forward to the agency was one that, I think that it lowered some barriers, and it showed that, kind of like you were saying, Jake, it's just because you have a mental health issue, right? You have a mental health incident, or you have an illness, that could just also just be a mental health injury, right? It doesn't mean that it's going to be something that sticks with you forever. Right. And again, maybe I'm speaking, from my own, kind of ignorant perspective. I always thought of that as, well, if you got mental health stuff, that's with you for life. Right. But it can actually just be an injury, you know, just like any other injury, and you can rehab yourself and get better from it and move on, you know, and, really kind of looking at it like that, I think is something that makes it more, more likely that people accept the help, whenever it's offered to them, you know, like, go get your rehab and, get yourself good, and then come on back and be the effective part of the team that you can be.
Yeah. The term I always use is scarring, because it's not necessarily something that you might, I think there's a misconception that, especially with this job and fire too. I know we flip our firefighter brothers and sisters a lot of shit, but I mean, they go through a lot as well. Right. And sometimes they're after, you know, they had no chance of proactive assist. They're on recovery, and it's just, it just weighs on you. And I think that there's a misconception in certain circles that, oh, I'm past this incident, I'm fine. And then you put it away, and it's more like, you know, you're putting it in a box and you're burying it in the sand. The problem is you're burying it in the sand right at the surf line, and that's going to come back up. And if you think that you've dealt with it and you put it away and you ignore it, versus kind of the way that I tend to look at things, is more like, you know, like a surgical scar. This happened. I have a scar to remember it by. I'm functional and okay now, but it's always there.
You're
not going to forget it, and to ignore it that it happened, or to pretend that it's going to be fine and not come back. I think that's where people get in a little bit more trouble, you know, when they never experienced it, and then it just comes back in this massive wave of, you know, anxiety or PTS, or, you know, I mean, and we've had it in trainings with some of the officers that we've, not that this is our intent, but because we simulate the stress so well, we've triggered PTS incidents, and they're just like, fuck, I thought I had this down and locked, and I need a minute. And it's like, okay, cool. Let's have it. Let's chat about it. Right. And it's obviously because we're safe space and we're open and we're not their agency and anything. It's like, let's talk about this. What's going on? And it just catches them, because they're like, oh, I was so sure I was good. But I wasn't. It's like, right. Because if you look at it like a scar, you know, that scar is always there. It doesn't mean it's going to impact your ability to do the job down the road, but you just don't want to forget that it's a part of you, and it's always there. And so then that way, instead of letting it build back up and ignoring it, you can just, you know, it's kind of continual rehab, right? It's just maintenance at that point, instead of trying to do some big overhaul again where you crash and burn. It's just such a tough, thing. And every individual person's different, you know? I mean, the three of us are kind of wired very similar. Obviously that's why we're friends too. But I mean, there's other people that just don't jive with this, right? They don't jive with this kind of, but they have a different method, but that's fine because it works for them. And that's where, you know, I just, again, and this isn't just a puff piece for Bakersfield. It's like, I just applaud what you've done and what all your training staff has done, because you guys are really truly providing a full spectrum of solutions to every type of officer that might come through your department. And to be honest, almost every type of customer that might come through as a customer of your department with what you guys have down there is just, it's really, cause you have a unique scenario. You've got a unique town, you know, city. I mean, it's very different from the air quote traditional ideology of what California is. I mean, your primary industry is, you know, oil and agriculture and transit, right? I mean, it's not entertainment, it's not software, it's not any of that kind of stuff that, you know, most people associate with California. It's I mean, for lack of a better term, it's considerably more, you know, rural and red. And right. And you just have a different approach that I think anybody that might be in some, again, air quotes, progressive city would look at and be like, this should be everywhere.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you know, we're really trying to, and thank you for the kind word, we're really trying to push that idea, though, that just like you said, that this is something that's important. It is something that we don't have to have somebody come in and tell us the answer, right? We can recognize it and develop our own processes and stuff that works for our officers, for our community, for the type of ops tempo that we have, and the type of things that that our officers encounter. And I think that really recognizing that it just starts with some action. You know, finding some good people to take action is really kind of the key. You know, and then again, there's always that perspective component where, you know, if you find yourself out of shape, you can't just go run a marathon once and now you're in shape, right? It takes that constant training, right? And just like, you know, it works the same with our minds, and you got to constantly prepare yourself, you know, whether it's through education or it's through some, you know, mental health services or, you know, reading or relaxing, whatever it is, you know what I mean? There's ways to, you know, develop that kind of plasticity with our mind and that resilience with our overall person, you know, that we can do. And I think more so now than ever, not just with our agency, but with law enforcement in general, that is something that is, it's being recognized, you know, and the importance of it's being recognized. Right. I mean, we put all this training and we should into tactics and use of force and things like that for some stuff that happens in less than 1% of our contacts with the community, right? But what happens in most of our contacts with the community is somebody's emergency that we're having to deal with, right? And that's the same with fire, you know, EMS and any of that, you know, first responders in general, dispatchers, like we were talking about earlier. I mean, it is constantly dealing with the chaos that is, you know, kind of laid at your feet. And it is every single call is a mental game, right? There's a mental component. I don't want to marginalize it and say it's a game, but there's a mental component to that you're dealing with somebody who's got an issue, or you're taking a little bit of their baggage on. And we're in law enforcement just now trying to really make some strides and catch up with where we need to be for that, to really respond to that, deal with it effectively and recover from it.
Yeah, my mother-in-law put it perfectly in terms of, you know, what you know, as you know, the job I've done and from the military on to law enforcement and stuff. And she said, you know, our type of people, you know, I always call us our warrior class or our guardian class, whatever you want to call it. You know, she described it perfectly by saying, you guys are burden bearers. You know, you basically put the world's burdens on your shoulders and you just go, right? We try to solve these issues. We solve these problems. And that's the thing where the more problems you solve, the more extreme the problems become. We tend to forget that we need to check on ourselves too, right? And I think, you know, with the way Bakersfield has done it is they put that at sort of the forefront. You know, you guys put that at sort of the forefront. Like, yes, we've got all these missions, all these jobs. We got all the seizures of force. We got all this and this, as a community. But now let's, how are you doing? You know, right. which not too many agencies ask that question though, of their officers, right? You know, I've dealt with officers that went to two SIDS death in like a matter of a week and no one checked on them.
Right.
Right. And to me, it's like, man, like there's a human component to us. Right. I mean, those are not easy calls to go to, you know, or, you know, when you're holding somebody's hand and they're dying right in front of you, those are not easy things to go, or you're telling a family that their daughter was murdered. You know, those are not easy burdens to bear. Right. And when as an agency, you know, Colin Powell said it best, the day your soldiers stop coming to you is a failure in leadership. Right. And they believe that you do not care. But, you know, with Bakersfield, just showing that you care, right, you're going to get a lot more buy-in from the officers. You're sure you're going to have your typical, you know, I mean, we love change, right? As a profession, we absolutely change, but you know, eventually you'll get that buy-in and it's going to be more on your heavy hitters, like your really good police officers, you know, and they're the ones that lead the charge. Just like, you know, in the army, the E4 mafia, right? When the E4 mafia does something, everyone else is going to fall in line because the E4 mafia was, you know, they bought into it. So it's really nice and refreshing to hear just the more work, you know, over the past couple of years we've been talking, like it seems like Bakersfield is just trying to keep up or not fall behind that curve of resiliency, officer wellness, and on top of all the other things you guys already are doing. But that, you know, component is, to me, is probably the most important component of this profession is, you know, yeah, sure, you got the cool SWAT stuff undercover, you know, all these awesome, you know, things that we do and the awesome world we live in. But to bring it back, and instead of referring to, which I've noticed over and over that, you know, you kept saying the person, you know, our person. Yeah, you know, you bring it to a human level versus the officer, because now, you know, it almost sounds robotic, right? Versus right. Recognizing that there is a huge human component to this job.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, yeah, I don't want it to sound like we've got it all figured out, because this is a little bit like the allegory of the cave, right? Where, you know, for so long we were in the cave and we thought we had, you know, in law enforcement, we thought we had it all figured out. And now we've stepped outside and our eyes are still adjusting to the sun, right? So, you know, there is a lot that, you know, we've recognized that there's a lot more out there, but we certainly don't have all of the processes. You know, I'll speak for myself. I certainly don't do everything right. There's a lot of times that I'll look at a topic that I brought up with people or a conversation that I had with our, you know, some of our organizational leaders, and man, I really, you know, dropped the ball on it, or I didn't say what I needed to say, or I didn't say it in a way that was completely thought through, you know, and I didn't model it the way that it needed to be modeled, or provide the example that they needed. There are definitely learning curves and definitely growing pains that we're still experiencing, you know, and I think that's good, you know, because it's ultimately it makes us better, and it's very clear that we don't have it all figured out, but it, as kind as the words are, like there's still a lot of work to do. So, but I definitely appreciate it. And it is, I got to give credit to our chief and our assistant chiefs, you know, and the rest of our command staff. Like, we truly have some just kind-hearted, very solid character people that I think that they really truly care, not just for the community and not just for their rank, but they truly care for the team that we're fielding, you know, and it is awesome to be part of an awesome team. Right. So it feels good, you know, it feels good to go out there and be part of a winning team and part of a team that truly is making a difference. And really kind of bringing it full circle, if we don't know ourselves and we're not, you don't have that emotional intelligence, or at least that introspection level that is necessary to know ourselves and to know where our strengths and weaknesses are, or where our needs are, then there's really no way that we're going to be able to recognize that in somebody else, you know? And so again, I don't want it to sound like it's completely self-serving, but The better we make our officers at recognizing wellness and treating themselves well, then the intent is that they will then take that out to our community and treat them even better and make sure that they're the type of officer that our community needs, not just the type of officer that they want to be.
Ted, you're really good at this because you keep setting me up for all of my questions. It's supposed to be the other way, sir. You're crushing it. But that, I mean, literally is like the perfect segue. The final thing, you know, because we want to be respectful of your time and it's a Saturday and you got family and every, and, you know, the dog really, really needs you. But, you know, we ask this of everybody. If for anybody that's listening right now, you know, they might be going on shift. They may be coming off. They might be, you know, heading into the next rotation, whatever that is. We always try to give them, you know, from our guest, one thing that they can do practical on the ground right now, today, tonight, you know, the next time out, to make them just 1% better. And especially in this regard, you know, on the patrol side with our officers, or even in the command side, you know, what is one thing you can give them that they can do today, this shift, whether it's briefing or on the road or with an interaction, that can get them just, you know, that 1% better that they can, and then start looking into, you know, transferring to Bakersfield.
Yes, definitely look into that because we definitely need the people. Man, that's a tough question. I really like that question. Boiling it down to one thing, I think the best thing that any of us can do is read. You know, is find different material to read and really invest in our knowledge of how humans work, how leadership works, you know, how that communication works, things like that. I think that stuff is huge. I know that I used to focus a lot on just the tactical training, right, which was always something that was interesting to me. And I really liked that. I really felt pretty comfortable at it at one point. Not nearly as comfortable with it now, but back in the good old days. Right. But I think that through the years, one thing that's kind of stuck with me is just reading, you know, is, finding different things. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a police thing or a military thing, but, reading books and learning about, social contract, you know, the, contract, between us and the community, or even just social dynamics and what it takes to interact and be part of a team. Culture is a huge thing. So, I would say that really, I guess if it was just one thing, really asking yourself every day, if you're, participating at the level that you would expect, you know, if you're all in all the time, then awesome. And if you're not, you need to be honest with yourself and figure out why, or figure out how you need to, what you need to do to be able to, participate at a higher level.
That's so awesome. I cannot thank you enough for all the time today. And, you know, on that reading front, because conveniently enough, one of our supporters, Havoc Journal, they are, they've got all kinds of great information over there for both military and the law enforcement side of things. So, you know, if you're going to take Ted's advice tonight, you want to find something to read, you're sitting, you know, on your lunch break and pop on your phone, hop over to Havoc Journal and havocjournal.com and take a look at some of the articles there and just start reading. As Ted said, you will be that little bit better today and then a little bit better tomorrow and just keep on going from there. But yeah, Ted, we can't thank you enough. And honestly, we wouldn't have the opportunity to be here to talk to you and have this chance if it wasn't for all of our supporters. AAA Police Supply, the good friends over there with the law enforcement listeners listening, that's that one-stop shop for all your duty gear needs. Check them out at AAAPoliceSupply.com. Use that code HYBRID10 for 10% off every order you make. And of course, as I referenced, our friends at the Havoc Journal, independent news, everything factually based, geopolitics, science, tech, finance, contemporary affairs, entertainment, law enforcement, military, havocjournal.com, and our friends there at the Partners and Profiles in the Havoc podcast. Second Mission Foundation, educating, elevating, and advocating our service community, helping them find their second mission. Go to secondmissionfoundation.org for more information, along with our friends at 22 Mohawks, combating veteran suicide by providing assistance to those vets needing help, 22mohawks.com. And of course, our good friend Kyle Lamb and Viking Tactics, the best tactical gear anywhere from battle belts to slings and everything in between. VikingTactics.com is the spot you need for gear that works every time the job calls for it. And of course, our good friends at the Overwatch Project. Head over to OverwatchProject.org for more information on how to form workable plans of action and how to just fucking ask. Iman, man, Ted crushed it. We're batting 1,000 this season. This has been so great, dude.
Yeah, no, absolutely amazing episode today. For the past several episodes, just guest after guest, just been knocking it out of the park. So, hey, Ted, thank you so much. Just hang out another minute. We'll talk offline.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Ted. And everybody else out there tonight and or tomorrow, man, do your best. 1% better. Stay safe.
Stay sapient.